I was, what, 40 by the time I heard about codependency or attachment styles. It just wasn't even on my radar. And the more that I can understand this and have a mental framework to see myself and then to not take it personally, to be like, oh, Megan, you're avoidant. Why are you avoidant? You're not feeling safe. Oh, why am I not feeling safe? What need isn't being met there? And it's been really helpful for me to at least understand and be compassionate with myself in those moments, rather than to blame myself, blame my partner, blame my family, you know, go into the blame game, because that's really not empowering. So this has been a huge, huge trip into empowering myself.
Okay. Wow. Okay. It's gonna be really emotional.
There is no loss for being honest.
The real work of life is the work that we do inside ourselves.
The responsibility we feel towards the world, like questioning, challenging, say something.
Raw and vulnerable and open conversation.
That was the best part. I'm scared of friendship.
Taking a breath. Just talk.
Shame and guilt. Vulnerabilities.
What does it really mean to be friends?
And we trust
the
you.
The real work that we do is overcoming our insecurities every day and learning how to love more.
As examples of the change we want to see in the world.
Just talk.
Taking a breath. So if we just take a breath.
My face is on fire from the doctors. To have healthier relationships with women, they need healthier relationships with other men.
The real work of life is the work that we do inside ourselves.
So I'm in an open relationship with my husband, and my husband and I sold our house 10 months ago. We have twins that are 4 years old, we travel around the world, and this is my boyfriend.
Hi!
Perfect!
Hi.
Hi, welcome back to another episode of Amory, where it's our intention to put more love into the world, one vulnerable conversation at a time. So before we get into this podcast, I just wanted to do a short little shout out that we'll be starting the next self-love journey in about a week or two, the beginning of August. And if it has called to you at all, I would highly, highly, highly encourage you to reach out to me, to reserve a spot, to ask any questions that you might have. And if anything, to really feel the resistance that's coming up in you for not taking the journey, because that in itself is a lot of work. It's like, am I worthy of doing this? Can I do this? And even, can I afford this? And I know that question very well. So if the only thing that is holding you back is, I would love to do this and I'm totally up for the work, but I can't afford it, reach out to me directly. I've got two or three spots where I'm offering big discounts to people who are ready, ready, ready to do the work. The next groups and the group info is available on our website at amorypodcast.com, and you can go to courses and select the self-love journey. Or you can just send us a message directly on Instagram and we'll try to answer your questions there. So without further ado, I thank you for listening. We love your participation in these conversations with us. Please know what you think. I love talking about everything that I've learned on my journey around codependency and attachment. And of course, I always love talking with Kyle. We get to geek out about it and share our personal experiences. So I hope you enjoy this. Maybe it resonates with you. Maybe you're on your journey and really looking at your own codependency and your own attachment styles. I think awareness is key in helping us in our growth. So thanks so much for listening and enjoy the episode. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, Megan.
I know that on a lot of our previous podcasts, we have discussed codependency and attachment styles as we've been learning about it. And I think I'd like to devote this whole podcast to that topic.
I think it's a good idea. And I've been bothering you about it for a while because for me, I think it was one of the biggest tools or lenses of understanding our relationships and how they work. This is one of the biggest like things that I've needed.
Yeah, when did it get on your radar?
So I think I talk about this in previous podcasts, but it definitely came onto my radar through the holistic psychologist on Instagram, and she had started a conversation about codependency and what it looks like, and it just resonated. You know, it resonated that that was something that I had seen in my relationship with my mom, and then of course I started seeing it everywhere, And I think the biggest thing that stood out to me really quickly was the feedback loop, which is a relationship, right? Where we're exchanging information, but the feedback loop of guilt. When you guilt someone into something, that is really a mechanism of codependency. Because if you guilt someone to do something, which is essentially using a reward punishment system, right? Like a binary reward punishment system, you are manipulating, you know, whether it's serious or not, or, you know, manipulation is obviously a word that is on a spectrum, right?
I'm like, I manipulate my kids if I'm using reward and punishment.
No,
for
we
sure.
all do. These are the awakenings of this journey. It's like, oh wow, we manipulate, and it's not, what I'm trying to say is it's not necessarily from an evil, trying to harm people place. It's trying to get what you want. It's trying to express a feeling. If there's an unmet need there, there's all these different things wrapped into it.
So my kids manipulate me, you know, it's just the more that we unravel
this. And it works. We do it because it works.
God, yeah.
Right? We wouldn't do it if it didn't work. And I think that was kind of the epiphany, is that if you don't let guilt work on you, and obviously these are the things that you can become aware of. You can be a sender or a receiver of mm-hmm. guilt, right? And if you are a receiver of guilt, if someone's guilting you, which I've experienced in my family, and that's probably comes with the Irish Catholic family package of tools, is guilt. We're taught it, and we learn how to use it. But learning that if someone uses guilt on you and you don't fall for that guilt, so you don't give your power away because you feel guilty, you don't move away from your authentic self, you don't give that up, you know, you don't do those things in reaction to guilt, things really start to change for the better, you know, and you don't go down that spiral of guilt becoming shame, right? Which is a quick maneuver from guilt to shame, where if you give away your power, if you don't do what you authentically want to do because you're afraid of being punished, or you have this bullshit reward that you're jumping for, you step away from that authentic part of you. So there's a lot of things wrapped into it. And I think that, again, was just the beginning. And that's a whole, you know, rabbit hole in itself.
Yeah, I feel like I'm learning so much about this. And it really, for me, came on my radar when I read the book Polysecure. So to be clear, we're kind of talking about the umbrella of codependency and attachment styles.
Attachment theory,
yeah. And Jessica Fern really put on my radar the different types of attachment, what those experiences are like. Do we securely attach to the people in our lives and even ourselves, or are we insecurely attached? And if we're insecure, that can manifest in a couple of different ways. And when I started reading the book, realizing, wow, I am very much anxious in certain relationships, and then I'm really avoidant in others. And then you and I feel like have really deepened that conversation to view it as something that oscillates and that goes back and forth, and you're perhaps never just one of them. And I think that that's where reading the book and then having our discussions, I feel like we're layering on how we're relating to this information. And that's to see it more as patterns instead of just this diagnosis of, oh, I'm avoidant in my relationship style, or I'm anxious, or I'm securely attached. Because I think that we can oscillate between any one of those states at any given points.
Yeah. And I think one of the things, you know, that occurred to me from reading Polysecure is yes, she's on to something in a massive way, and there's more. Mm-hmm. And I think and there's more part to me is that it depends, your attachment style depends on your environment. It depends on your relationships and what your friend, your parent, your partner, your lover is doing. Because if your partner takes on an anxious energy, or is feeling anxious with you, that is going to push you and typically push you away. You'll respond with avoidance when someone comes at you.
If you're not already secure in that moment, which is the big caveat, because I feel like I can deal with anxious people really well, and I can feel grounded and present and feel like I've got good, healthy boundaries and I'm good and I'm just with someone that happens to be anxious.
Right.
But if
90% of us will fall in this category.
Exactly. And I feel like if I'm not secure, which happens, I can easily go into like avoidant, just like, oh crap, I can't be around that energy. I don't want to deal with that. That's too much. It's like, I will then run the other way.
Right. And I think, so we can take on these different energies. And I think she does a really good job of giving different quadrants, different ways to think about it. But to me, it's been the most helpful to understand, like, this is a spectrum that we oscillate between, you know, and one side we can be anxious and on one side we can be avoidant. And if somebody comes at me with anxious energy, I become avoidant. If that's my tendency, is to pull away. If someone's being too strong, too forceful, too dominant,
too needy,
too much, too, yeah. And that,
I have to interject here because this is the language that I've made a mental note around. If anybody is too something, if anybody's too something, then I am prescribing to them what they are. And how could someone be too much at that moment?
Right.
What we do is we're externalizing our own feelings of the inability to be with the other person's feelings.
It's too much for me.
Yeah, but why? So then what?
And that's my issue.
Exactly.
It's not that person.
Exactly. Right. So the language around there.
Or it's a combination of us.
That I wanna be better at is like, no, nobody's ever too much, too bold, too this, too quiet, too whatever. It's like, oh, I'm having a hard time.
This is too much for me
with
right
that
now.
Energy. Yeah. So if I own it, you know, and I can come to that person and say, I'm having a really hard time with this energy, I can't process it right now, and then I can make a request. And I think that's a much more empowered way of dealing with that emotion instead of being avoidant, you know, instead of going the other way. But I think that that is when you can know that you're in a more secure place to say, this is my truth right now. I'm not speaking for you. Like, you are who you are. You're doing what you're doing. But for me, these are my needs right now, or, you know, my inability or whatever I need to do in that moment.
Yeah, well, that's a really good catch, and I appreciate that. So
I've been working on it.
Good job.
Thank you.
And I think I do mean this in the way of, you know, if someone's energy overpowers you, and I think that is your responsibility, that is your experience, and you can do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I think what my awareness has taught me is that when someone comes at me with more than I can handle, then I will avoid that interaction. I will pull away. I will shut down. I'll tune them out. And that's, again, like a coping mechanism from childhood that I think I've, you know, well established, you know, where that came from, which is the household I grew up in was basically my first two attachments to my parents were with two people that were working a lot, very stressed out, young in their careers. I was their firstborn. They were trying to do all these things. And I identify that as kind of the environment that, as much as my parents loved me and they were doing the things that they thought were best, their anxiousness was felt by me, and I pulled away and I shut down, and I was a shy, quote unquote, shy kid, which I don't think shyness is a personality trait, and all these things I promise are connected. But shyness for me was avoidance. Yeah. Shyness for me was withdrawing within and not being able to express and deal with my emotions and deal with what was happening for me.
And why do we do that? We do that when we feel unsafe, or when the environment feels unsafe to feel what we feel, express what we feel. And even the whole act of avoidance, I know that I become even hyper avoidant when I feel like if I state how I feel in that moment, that it is going to be met with a response that is going to be, or I will feel unsafe in that response.
And your nervous system could literally be like, this is, you know, it's saying it's not safe. It's
not
saying
safe, not safe, not
I'm,
safe.
You know, I'm heightened. I'm anxious. Like, I'm worried about this. I'm scared. I'm not feeling safe. So that's
so these
a reaction.
Are, yeah. And these are, so this is human. We're talking about being human here.
Right.
And that's why I love this discussion, because I mean, I was what, 40 by the time I heard about codependency or attachment styles. It just wasn't even on my radar. And the more that I can understand this and have a mental framework to see myself, and then to not take it personally, to be like, oh, Megan, you're avoidant. Why are you avoidant? You're not feeling safe. Oh, why am I not feeling safe? What need isn't being met there? It's been really helpful for me to at least understand and be compassionate with myself in those moments, rather than to blame myself, blame my partner, blame my family, you know, go into the blame game, because that's really not empowering. So this has been a huge, huge trip into empowering myself.
And I like to layer in the emotions and feelings into everything, right? Because the attachment styles that we have are not static. They're not in a vacuum. They're connected to other things. They're connected to our emotions. And for me, it's like anger. Let's just take anger, which is a fun one. And I encourage people that are listening to think about anger. And when you feel angry, what do? Following that anger. And for me, I don't want to explode. I don't want to do the things that I've seen in my lifetime done. You know, maybe in my household, for example.
Because you felt the impact of that.
Yeah, I was on the other side of it, and so I've done the opposite, which is I don't express anger. I shut it down. I suppress it.
You implode.
Yeah, and I avoid. So I avoid. I'm literally avoiding that emotion, right? So then that sends you into this pattern, which we call, you know, avoidance, and our attachments become avoidant. But it, maybe it started from this feeling, you know, that we're not expressing. That
you know
we're
what?
Feeling.
I realized that my relationship to my anger was that I wasn't safe to be angry. I wasn't safe experiencing that emotion. Mm-hmm. So it's the way that I was relating to that emotion. I had an internal relationship to that emotion. So of course we can be avoidant with ourselves. We can be anxious with ourselves. We can be avoidant with ourselves, just like we can be anxious or avoidant with other people. We also can create secure attachment. And that has been my whole journey. And I know I've talked already at length at it, my whole journey to creating secure attachment with myself, which is the question, how am I currently relating to myself right now? Am I safe to feel how I feel right now? Or am I making myself wrong? Am I, you know, we've all internalized all of these systems, all of the external structures around us.
Yeah.
So it's really been a conscious way to, as Jessica Fern describes it, create earned secure attachment. I have earned the secure attachment with myself, and I'm not always there. Sometimes I flip out of it and then I have to go, oh wow, I'm feeling very insecure here. What does that mean? Insecure means not feeling safe. Why do I not feel safe? And then I go through this whole thought process and loop again.
You had a good point about where this all comes from, which is obviously like we are born with the capacity or necessity of attachment.
Yeah.
We need attachment to survive.
And that's where I think the words are getting into the idea of codependence is actually really, really, really the bigger umbrella. Because we're born into this world 100% dependent on our caregivers. So a child cannot eat or, you know, do anything. We need touch. We need so much to survive in this world. So we're built in with a system of needing to connect to our caregivers, and vice versa, our caregivers to connect with us. And that first relationship is so important. And it's interesting being a parent because I can relate to these concepts, not only as I was a kid and the way that I feel like I related to my parents, but also how am I relating to my kids and how do I see my kids relating to me? And you and I had a great discussion this morning at breakfast about power and how power is definitely connected to this idea of not only codependence, but the assertion of one's independence as we get older and we're more capable of doing different things. I see that in my kids every day, actually, because every day they learn something new, they are more capable. And so I have to keep relating back to them. And in a way, it is a dance of power, because in certain moments when they want to assert themselves, it's like, Mom, I can do it myself. So I have to sit back and go, okay, yes, this is something that they can do that by themselves. They want to try to do by themselves. I can see their anger well up when they're not given the chance to do something by themselves when they really want to. And so it is their assertion of their own personal power. And we can connect that back to this authentic self, which honestly, we can go into a whole rabbit hole in there because I don't even understand the concept of an authentic self. I'm not sure if I'm totally clear because I think it could be so many different things. Mm. But, you know, we'll call in this moment the authentic self is the driver behind wanting to do something by oneself. You know, I see that my kids, it's really easy. And then I can see if I'm withholding power there. If I'm like, no, you know, I'm not going to let you do it. You aren't old enough to do that. Or my fear, like, oh crap, what if they hurt themselves? So that there's this back and forth and back and forth of power. And I think power and power literacy is one of those things that we, again, we aren't taught. We don't have a lot of language around it. But I think it happens every day. If you're a parent, you know the power struggles with your kids and how much that can push your buttons and how much power is either usually flowing one way or the other. And it's not bad, right? If we just view power as like what is, it is part of the equation of this very dependent to independent and, you know, in their codependent relationship that we have with our caregivers.
Yeah. And I think that when you look generationally, you know, people are now talking a lot about generational trauma, but there are so many things that get passed down. And to me, it's really clear that our attachment styles and codependency is something that is definitely getting passed down. And I think if you think about our grandparents, you know, our parents' parents, they were probably super avoidant, right? You know, they call them the greatest generation, and they went off to World War II and they did all these things, but they were very much like, get out of the house, you know, and come back, you know, basically when the sun comes down. And you know, they were more avoidant with their with their children. And I think our parents reacted to that by becoming these, you know, what we now call helicopter parents, and, you know, what do they call them? Tiger moms. And there's all kinds of different things, which is showing this complete opposite, which is like this, you experience one thing, you do the opposite, and you go too far on that extreme as well. And I think that's what we see, you know, now as we look at our parents, it's like, okay, well, they were really anxious because they were responding to being their parents being avoidant with them. And they wanted to be more loved. You know, they grew up in that kind of an environment, that kind of a generation. And that to me is now gets amplified to the next generation. So it's, these things get passed down as well. And I think, you know, I'm obviously being very general with how I'm describing entire generations of people, which are all very unique and individual. But I think there are a lot of patterns that I see that are pretty true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I see our generation, I do think we are obviously becoming more conscious and more aware and more focused and attention on our mental health and our emotional well-being, and letting our kids, you know, be more emotional and not be so heteronormative or gender, you know, all these gender confines and things like that. With all these different behaviors, we're allowing them to be more free, wear colors that are more on a broad spectrum, you know, for boys and things like that, that are just small little changes that I think will have huge results on how our kids grow up in that next generation.
I mean, I hope so. That's the one thing we don't know, how we're, what we're really doing. I'll speak myself. I don't really know what I'm doing. All I know is for me, I didn't have the capability of really talking about and describing my emotions too much growing up. Or at some point I decided that certain emotions weren't safe, so I just wasn't going to feel them. And with my kids, I've really worked on, how do I give language around this? And I've had to model it. Like, I'm angry. I'm feeling this. I'm frustrated. I'm sad. And now my kids can easily name their emotions, and then we can talk through. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm learning with them. And that's why it's so cool.
And they're like sovereign over their own bodies at, you know, six years old. And to me, that's a huge, huge, incredible thing.
Yeah.
That I think we, you know, I would encourage to you to talk about more in future episodes on parenting, because I think that's a huge, it's a huge, huge thing about empowerment, which is a lot about what we talk about, but empowering children, empowering other people, you know, your body is a big part of that. Your story is another. And I think those are two big parts that I think about.
Yeah. I mean, I can give a shout out to one of my friends at some point. Her daughter was, I think she was a mom before I was. And so even before I had kids, she was telling me how she doesn't force her daughter to give hugs because it's her body and she can decide who she wants to hug.
Yeah.
And that was like a beautiful gift. I'm like, whoop, take that, save it for later. And it stuck with me. So it's been really great to learn from parents that I see, and I look at how they interact with their kids. And yeah, I mean, there's no guidebook to being a parent. So I think we're all doing our best. But the more aware we can be of our own styles, and especially I'm starting to be very aware of my avoidance style, especially when interacting with my kids. Mm-hmm. Because right now they're almost six, they're twins. In all honesty, I can get easily overwhelmed with, if they're both talking to me at the same time, if they're both, you know, needy. Whining, needy, like if they're overly needy, I go avoidant. And I'm just like, fuck it. Mommy's going to go over here and take a mommy break. And so I've had to work on processing and tell them, like, this is too much. I need one of you to talk at a time. And I have to catch myself. Sometimes I'm like, oh, checked out. I checked out again. I'm totally avoidant. I got overwhelmed. And then I have to like assert myself back in. And yeah, I mean, that's all I can do, right? Is be conscious of, oh, no. I went there again. And, you know, or there's certain moments where I can be overly anxious if I'm having a moment where I'm like, crap, they've been watching a lot of screen time. And so then I get like overly involved and, you know, being like, okay, now we have to do this and this and this. Then I can get forceful because however they're acting or being is I make it mean a direct reflection on who I am as a person and how I am as a parent. And so that's, again, another spectrum of this attachment style to my kids. So I'm not always avoidant. I'm not always anxious. And sometimes I'm right there, totally secure. I'm like, I'm here with you, however you're showing up. And and we're all good. So it's like you said, it's not just one thing.
Yeah. And I'll add one more thing, and maybe we can talk more about our relationship as well. Mm-hmm. And like our attachment that we've kind of evolved over
Let's
time.
Let's go there.
Mm-hmm. But one more thing was that my mom and I actually had this conversation recently about how she admitted to me that there was a lot of guilt for her that she felt as a mom that was working and was, you know, away from home. And I was young, obviously, you know, when she went back to work. I mean, she went back to work right away. So she had a lot of guilt for that. And she and I had talked a lot about how anxious attachment was begun at that point because of that guilt. So mm-hmm. I'll bring it full circle back to guilt, which is like, if you're coming from guilt, if you're coming from insecurity with your kids, you're going to create some kind of insecure attachment, whether it be, you know, anxious or avoidant. But I think, you know, my mom and I had talked about this, that anxious attachment was formed because she felt guilty. And so when she was home, when she was around me, she wanted to be so immersed into me and my life and be, you know, be there energetically. But, you know, again, it's like this finding this harmony, this balance, and not coming from a place of being emotional. When you're creating that
reactive
bond. Yeah, yeah. And reacting to that.
Oh my God, I hear myself in that, because the first 2 years after the kids were born, I was working full time. So of course, when I was with them, I really wanted to be totally present, and then I didn't want to discipline. And when they're 2 years old and acting out, I didn't want to see myself like the disciplinarian mother. But that was to my discredit, because then I wasn't able to hold a boundary that now I'm like, oh God. All right. Boundaries here. Boundary. Yeah. But back to you and I. Yeah. And why is this all applicable? I think that's the big question too. Right. Why is understanding attachment theory and codependency, why is that beneficial if you are in a relationship? I mean, regardless of whether or not you're practicing polyamory, monogamy, or you're by yourself right now, not currently in a relationship with anyone.
I mean, we are like planets that are orbiting around each other, and our gravitational pull is like our attachment. Being aware of that pull and where it's coming from, and, you know, the interaction that we're having, the information that we're exchanging, what's coming towards us and what's coming from us or to us and from us. Yeah, it's such a huge part of our relationships. And you've talked a lot about your relationship to money and your relationship to objects, and you know, we both have sold a lot of the things that we owned, and we've changed the way we relate to, you know, objects and, you know, the minimalism that I think we both practice in many ways. And yeah, I think just understanding all these things and our relationship to it and how we attach or don't attach. And, you know, we can even attach to immaterial things that are outcomes and, you know, goals.
Oh my God.
And there's
yeah.
so much attachment that happens. And I think in our best effort to be safe, in our best effort to predict the future and know it and know the unknown. And it's scary to not know. It's scary to embrace the unknown or accept the unknown. And I think, especially for polyamory, for me, and the way that we live our life, it's been a practice of the unknown, because I can't plan ahead. I find myself being literally unable to plan ahead too far. And that was a super hard thing for me. You know, I went from having a 5-year plan, you know, to not being able to plan a few months in advance. And I have goals and I have dreams and visions, but I don't have these rigid things of me trying to control a future. You know, I think there's me taking each step and letting it unfold more. So it's like relation to everyone, relation to your life. It's yeah, really
relation to
powerful.
Everything. Right. And dare I say that our whole world and our whole reality, all it is relating. Mm-hmm. We exist in that meaning in between the me and the other, and the other could be people, places, things, past, future events, everything, ideas. It's like, what is my relationship to that thing? And so the more and the better that we get at identifying, am I anxious about this? Am I avoiding this? Right. Do I feel good and secure and that I could handle whatever comes up in this category of my life or with this person? And that's, yeah, I mean, it's hugely important.
And when did you feel or notice, and this is obviously looking back at mine and your relationship with like a 2020 vision that we didn't have, but when did you see the first attachment style with me.
I can tell you exactly where I was, and I said it out loud, but I didn't know what it meant. We were in Chicago. This was before you went to Europe that first time, and I hadn't even, Marty and I hadn't decided to sell the house yet, so it was the first time that
we
were apart.
I actually think I knew before that.
Oh, interesting. Let me share this one, and then you share the other one. I remember saying to you that I don't think we're at risk of our relationship ending because of a fight. I actually think that our relationship is at risk of ending because we both will just drift away from each other. And so I use the words drift away from each other, but, and now I would use the language, we would just be avoidant. We would be like, oh, fuck that, whatever. I'm going to get hurt. I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to look for other ways to satisfy these needs and walk away.
We were both not into conflict at all.
No.
Very avoidant of conflict. Very avoidant of emotions on a lot of levels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, believe it or not, people, this was Kyle and Megan 3 years ago. This is who we were when we met. And yeah, we've changed a lot.
Uh-huh.
But I remember as well, and not to focus on you too much, but I remember when you used to come over, you know, when we just first started dating, and how anxious you were that I was going to end it, or that I was going to say, I couldn't do this anymore, or this was too much.
Yes.
I remember just receiving you and that energy. And I just remember how that felt. Like, I felt your worry. I felt your anxiety.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah. I still get anxious with you when we're physically separate for a while. I'm maybe good for the first week or two, and now I'm more conscious of it, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I've totally mastered not feeling anxious.
Mm.
So maybe I can go 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but then at a certain point I've noticed, even last time when I was in California with Marty, there was a certain point where I was like, oh, I don't want to miss a call. I don't want to, you know, I just like, yes, I wanted to talk to you, but I felt like there was definitely some anxious relating going on still with you, even though I am more secure in our relationship now than I've ever been.
For sure. Yeah. Well, that's good to know. I mean, how can we work through that? Yeah.
that's what we're working on. And actually the end of PolySecure, there's a lot of really good practices about how to create a more secure relationship. So if you want to, I can go through the acronym. It's a really nice acronym.
Yeah.
And she says you can use it in relationship to other people and then relationship to yourself. So she uses the acronym HEART or HEARTS. And the H is here I am. It's just be present. Here I am. I'm present with you. I'm available. That makes sense, right? To be in a secure relationship, you have to be like present. Here I am. The E is express delight when we're able to see and revel in each other. I love that. And as it relates to myself, as I securely attach to myself, I love expressing delight in myself sometimes. I'm just like, I love being me. I love dancing on the beach at sunset. Like there's these moments. And for us, I mean, I feel like I express delight all the time when we get to be together.
Mm-hmm.
H-E-A, the A,
attunement.
Is it? Ooh, do you want to talk? About that one?
Yeah, attunement. I mean, I think that's one of my, you know, superpowers is just being attuned to your partner. What do they need? I mean, you can sense, as I was just talking about, being able to sense, I could feel your anxiety. I was attuned to how you were feeling. You know, if I'm attuned to you, I can at least adjust or try to make a space for what you're feeling and not react or pull away or judge you or whatever it is. Attunement is that connection, you know, being connected and aware of where your partner's at. And I think we all are able to say, oh, you know, what's wrong? And where are you at? What's going on with you? And kind of asking a question in a way that opens that up in a safe way.
And I would say not taking that personally.
100%.
It's like, whoa, this
Very
is where
important.
You're at. And for ourselves too, attuning to ourselves. Wow, I feel angry or I feel joy. I'm attuned to myself. We are on R. I think R stands for rituals and routines.
Mm.
So those are the things that create stability, really,
sacred.
In habits, like, that are sacred in our relationship.
Yeah, we've talked about what things are sacred for us and
what things are sacred
trying
for us.
To protect them. Having alone time without children or, you know, anyone in the universe, our bubble time, you know, no other people allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Amory, that's a big, ritual for us.
This is a ritual.
Being
mm-hmm.
able to connect to the community and create, being creative together. I think that's a huge part of what I think we both have birthed in Amory, and also the practices that help us do the work and connect to each other in that way.
Mm-hmm. And then as you turn that on yourselves, what are the rituals and routines that you have with yourself?
Oh man, I mean, how much time do you have?
You've got quite a few.
Yeah, I mean, there's like from breath work to surfing to being in nature to, you know, writing and my ways, my modes of expression. I mean, a lot of the things I think I find now where I'm like, oh, that's a thing I need to build a ritual or a routine around is something that's uncomfortable. Like I need to create something that sits me in that discomfort, you know, so often that it becomes comfortable and not a big deal. And I've talked in the past about like acute stress, which is kind of that, you know, a sharp, short period of stress, not a chronic, long-term damaging stress, but a short-term blast of it, a controlled amount that you can take on, you know, like hanging out with a guy that you're dating for an hour. Like those are things that are uncomfortable, but I do in
which
a short
you've done.
Period of time, which I've done in my own practice of doing the things that are uncomfortable, doing the things that are, bring up things for me that I'd rather avoid. I'd rather, you know, ignore, but I know that there's growth. I know that there's healing in being able to build practices around what I'm uncomfortable with. And I think there's a lot of things that I'm always looking for. You know, what am I uncomfortable with? And it's like, I grab it now. Mm-hmm. I go towards it rather than running away.
I remember when you started that practice.
Yeah, and it looks pretty crazy on the outside. It looks like, why would you do that to yourself? But I'm like, trust
but
me.
It works. It like, yeah, I would say too, that's actually that, well, we have so much recorded about jealousy already, but that is the process of jealousy too. It's like stepping into it.
Yeah.
And embracing it, that acute stress. Okay, moving on though. T for the acronym HEART or HEARTS, so that you can remember it to have a more secure relationship with yourself, is turn towards each other. Or
in conflict, right?
In conflict, right? After conflict, right? Turn towards each other.
Which we were saying was our big problem in the beginning.
Yeah. It was like, oh, I'm feeling conflict. I'm going to ignore
avoidant.
It.
We're
I'm
both
gonna...
are avoidant. We go away. And yeah, it doesn't get resolved. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
But I feel like we've done a really good job. Decent to good job.
We've gotten much better at saying like, oh, this is what's happening for me.
Yeah.
And being with it. Yeah.
I'm still waiting for you to like log more complaints with me, but you know, I feel like they come in small,
oh, they still come
small doses, but yeah, I'm still open for a complaint box.
Like there's going to be a windfall at some point. Like you did all this shit.
Actually, that's a great reminder because you used to get really mad like once every year and you would explode with like 10 things that you were mad
I
about.
I hadn't brought up earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that was a good reminder.
I remember that. Like the first time, I think first and only time I blocked you was when I was in Australia.
And I had to reach out to Marty and be like, Marty, can you help me here?
Oh man, yeah, I was in Australia and I was so pissed at you. I was so pissed. And you were like a week or two away from coming to Australia, flying around the world so that we could be in Australia and New Zealand together.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, fuck that, no, I'm done. And I just blocked you. It was like the first and only time I think I've blocked you, and it lasted maybe a couple hours.
Right.
And then we sorted it out. So I think the benefits of turning towards each other in conflict or after conflict to like mend, it's trust building. It's like, hey, we can go through conflict. We don't always have to agree, but especially when we don't agree, that we trust each other to step back into the relationship. Not to be like, oh, well, if we don't agree, fuck that, the relationship's over. Yeah, and I think that creates obviously a place of safety. And with safety, we become secure in a relationship. And all this is connected.
Yeah, it's funny because in conflict, I really desire resolution, you know, because I watch my parents not do, you know, not resolve things and have, you know, fights and never apologize, never say, you know, sorry. And that lack of resolution for me has been such a deep, deep wound in my relationships that when, and I know we've had this multiple times when we're distant and we have a fight and you're on another different time zone and I have to wait 12 hours to talk to you. It's like such a painful thing of waiting to resolve or waiting for you to have time to talk. And I think in many ways it's again, this, these lessons that I feel like I have to learn, which is having to sit with that pain and understand it and not live, you know, have this wound my whole life. I don't believe you have to.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And I know we've grown stronger in our time apart and times apart, and mm-hmm. and also acknowledging that there will be, you know, there will be, that's part of our relationship, and we choose that. We mm-hmm. choose, you know, we powerfully choose our relationship as it is. And yeah, and I think you were you were talking about something pretty cool yesterday about the price of admission.
Oh yeah, the cost of entry in a relationship. And I don't know who coined that. My friend was saying it was Dan Savage who coined that, the cost of entry in a relationship. But whoever it was, I'll see if I can find it in the show, put it in the show notes. But I really like that. It's like everybody that we relate to kind of has a cost, and we have to consciously choose that. You know, for you, I feel like my cost of entry to be in relationship with me is quite high. You know, I have another partner, I have kids. I'm not stationary in the world. There's quite a lot.
I have struggled with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if I'm really being honest, I feel like I've only just recently fully accepted that, you know, that reality, and also powerfully built my life around that, and built my life into that of saying, I want Megan, you know, in my life, and I want to work with her cost of entry, but I also need to make sure that you know, my life and the things that I want to do and you know, having freedom and these things that are really important to me are also represented, and they're not, yeah, they're not given away. They're not lost in that. And I feel like I've found a good balance. I've found a good harmony that feels good for me, and knowing that these things can change, and I feel like all of us are exercising our flexibility with life, with each other, mm-hmm. with having other partners, and, you know, not having a stationary single home that we live in, and, you know, dynamics with kids, and, you know, that they need things, and they're, you know, going to be going to school, and all the stuff that happens.
Just
over
a couple variables.
Yeah. And they change, you know,
yeah.
Like what you are giving them now would be different than what you give them in 5 years. And
they have different needs.
Yeah.
You know, we go back to kind of wrap this up full circle. I still can see this as a process of empowerment. Because as we grow up from a baby to, you know, toddler, child, or, you know, and then teens and into our adulthood, I think we have the opportunity to create healthy, secure attachments with ourselves and with others. And what that requires is it's a process of empowerment. You know, it's a process of recognizing that we are always interdependent, because we are always in relationship to both ourselves and everyone and everything around us. And there is an exchange of power somewhere in there. And it's really not about having to take power from someone else, but to accept. And when I hear you say, I fully accept this, it's like you are choosing it. You know, you accept the scenario, and then I think by default, you're empowering yourself in the scenario to say, I'm not a victim to this scenario, I actually choose it. And then I think that allows for the context of a more healthy, secure relationship, because then it's not a power struggle. So,
and I think one of the challenges I've had, and this is probably for my whole life, is the encroachment of other people's stories of my reality onto me, right? And people telling me what my reality is, people telling me what my story is, or them, you know, them giving me stories, if that is even English, people giving me stories of my,
here, take my narrative.
And a lot of people have said, like, oh, well, you deserve more than what Megan can give you. You deserve this. And I can totally see you as this father and all these things. And I feel like that has been this constant battle that I've had to deal with, of like taking that information in. And a lot of it coming from people that I know and people that love me, mm-hmm. and their intentions being good, but that being very hurtful. And again, it's like, what I didn't know that I didn't know was that that's them pushing their story onto me, mm-hmm. and I don't have to accept, you know, that story. I don't have to let that phase me. That's their story. That's their, it's a projection of whatever it is from them. And for me, it is about owning my story and what do I want? And there's nothing about me that has ever really felt comfortable in the norm, in the conventional. And I think the more that I really embrace that, the more free and the more authentic that I feel, you know, in who I am, which is this letting go, this exploration, this freedom of, I don't play by your rules. I don't play by the rules. I live a beautiful, meaningful, mindful life, and I don't need this patriarchal bullshit rules to tell me how to be, you know, and how to be in a very positive, light-giving way of how I live my life.
Yeah, I see that. I think it's very, very empowered. You said the word authentic, like this is authentically me. And that goes back to that question of what is the authentic self? And we didn't get it all into Gabor Mate, but I think he also put on the map for me the idea of codependency and our constant struggle between wanting to be our authentic self and belonging. And so belonging being like, I have the love and attention of my caregivers and I'm not kicked out of the group, but I have this desire to do this certain thing. And I think the more that we can identify our needs and really work on meeting them ourselves or having the language to express that and communicate that and feel safe. And it is this whole process. I mean, we probably could go on a whole other rant around really what is the authentic self? I'm still a little baffled there, but that's maybe another topic.
It's pretty woo-woo, but I think it's probably more simple than anything. And it's more of an energetic an intuition of like what we feel is right. You know, we just know when things are right. We know when they're wrong. Like for us, you know, what feels right, what feels not good.
That sounds like a whole other conversation. Henry, would you record that one with me in the future?
I'm in.
All right. Any final thoughts? I do.
Well, I feel like the last thought I can give, I feel like I kind of got off the hook about my attachment styles with you. But what I would say really quickly is just that I've been anxious with you. I've been avoidant. And I think in the beginning, you know, I was avoidant because I was like, I don't want to fall in love with this person. I'm afraid to fall in love with her. I'm afraid to fall in love in general. Like this wasn't just about you. It was about falling in love in general was scary. And it had caused me pain in the past. And so I was avoidant with love. I was avoidant with giving my heart away. I was avoidant with being emotional and vulnerable. Again, people might be shocked to hear this, but this is the Kyle that was over, you know, 3+ years ago. And yeah, shit has changed. So that's the beautiful part of the story. But I was avoidant with you because I was afraid. And you know, I think I've talked a lot about how I've stepped into those fears and faced those fears and embraced them. And so, you know, I worked on that avoidant attachment. And I think the anxious stuff also surfaced as well of me being afraid to be replaced. That whole narrative came up, you know, which was attached to so many things as well of in my insecurities and past experiences with girls and women and how I, you know, had felt in this, you know, monogamous competitive environment, how I had lost so many times that, you know, my confidence was shattered, but having these fears of abandonment and that was getting triggered every time we would leave. And I would feel this fear that I would lose you and that this space would cause a problem. And I think the last thing that I think I am working on now is like this connecting with other women, dating other women, and not being afraid of what that is and afraid that that will impact our relationship and that I'll lose you. And I think that's kind of the piece that I'm working on now. So stay tuned for that.
I love these layers and layers and layers. For anyone out there practicing polyamory, it is layered full of learning. I've really enjoyed it though. And I feel like I have such a great partner and partners to do this with. So thank you.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Love you too, Kyle. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Amory. Giving us your time and attention means so much to us. So we thank you. If you did enjoy this episode, please consider sharing it. You can share it with people you know or give us a shout out on social media. We love that. Remember, we've got access to a full online course, Transforming Jealousy at Pay What You Want. And we always love people joining our Amory community as a patron. So if you've received value from this podcast or our podcast over the last 2 years, please consider joining us. Your small donations to Amory go a long way in making us capable of continuing to produce these episodes and sharing our learnings, which we love to do, as you know. So thank you for joining us. We love you, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.